Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
And this is part two of RSR's list of evidence for the global flood.
Bob, there is no evidence for a global flood.
Oh, yeah, you said that last week.
I've heard that over and over again. And if I had a dollar for every time I've heard that, I could buy a boat.
Yes. Now, that's a pretty good evaluation. I think you probably could buy a boat.
Yeah, I couldn't buy one as good as Noah's Ark.
Not at all. So, Fred, we began with the evidence for the materialist last week. We've broken our list of evidence into two parts, evidence for materialist and evidence for Christians, since folks in these two camps tend to be willing to consider different kinds of evidence. That's sad because everyone should listen to Jesus Christ.
Absolutely.
Because his words lead to eternal life. And he said there is no other way.
And he said that there is evidence for a global flood.
Oh, he sure did. Right. And we'll get to that in part two. You're cheating. You're jumping ahead. But when we look at evidence for a global flood, it does reach some people. Fred, Bob and you're live. We've been on the air 27 years, started out radio and then TV right away for years across the country. So many people, as in we have heard from hundreds, perhaps 1,000 over the years, who said, Bob, it was the science shows on creation and evolution that got me hooked. Then I think, why are you talking about the Bible? But then they listen to the gospel of Jesus Christ, and so many have come to the Lord.
You know, I was one of those that probably, I'd say I was a carnal Christian. I didn't, you know, really take the Bible seriously, but I believed in Jesus Christ. Mm. But I saw your TV show, and there was lots of science on it, and it was really interesting. And, you know, you can get people to talk about science. Most people are interested in some kind of science because they're like the Greeks in Jesus' day. You know, Jesus was a stumbling block. So if you right away talk about the gospel, which I'm not saying you shouldn't.
Right.
But a lot of times it's like, oh, I don't want to hear about Jesus. Oh, that's, you know.
But there's different approaches for different people.
Exactly.
And thousands, if not tens of thousands, have come to the Lord through the creation science movement. Fred, it might be over 1 million people have come to the Lord through the modern creation science movement. And the New Testament says that faith is the evidence of things not seen.
Yep.
So in our list, we begin with the evidence for the materialist. And if we could do just a quick summary of where we're up to, I think that'd be fun. So there's no evidence for a global flood, right?
Yet.
No evidence, except there's an average of 1 mile deep of sedimentary layers on the continents.
Yep, and billions of dead things laid down by water in strata all over the earth, the fossil record.
That's right. There's that. And then there is the documented extinction event that destroyed 90% of all the species that lived in the oceans, something a global flood would very likely do.
Yeah, and another one, there's more than sufficient water in our 2 mile deep oceans to cover the entire earth.
Right. And that's especially with the pre-flood earth, the way God created it, with lower mountains, of course, but still mountains. Then there's all the major mountain ranges have marine fossils on their summits.
All the major mountains.
So
and a lot of those fossils are in a closed position like clams, which
yes.
means they were buried alive,
and
not slowly over millions of years.
And even Everest, the documentary I mentioned last week, it's playing now. They mention on the very summit of Everest, they have fossils of marine organisms right on the summit. That's so exciting.
Yeah, so I'll pretend I'm an evolutionist. So when are you guys going to finally present evidence for a global flood? I haven't heard any yet.
Yeah, right. All right, well, let's just keep going.
Okay. How about anthropology cataloging hundreds of cultures with an ancient corporate recollection of the flood?
Oh yeah, everybody
around
the world,
major cultures,
remembers a global flood. We talked about that. Then the extent of the strata on the continents of the earth, the stratigraphic layers, they're regional and even continental in scope If these layers were laid down by a local flood, it was a pretty big local flood.
Yeah.
Look at the Grand Canyon, and those layers go for thousands of square miles.
Yeah, and we talked about those layers and the flat gaps in between them.
Between them. No evidence. I mean, it's standard. It's characteristic that you see, for as far as the eye can see, where it's been carved out, where what's below your feet is now exposed so we can see it. As far as the eye can see, parallel layers, boundaries between the strata, flat gaps,
Called. There's no erosion there. And, you know, water's pretty erosive.
Yes, I'd say so.
And why is erosion missing?
Yes. So, and it's because those layers were deposited rapidly in a global flood, not over hundreds of millions of years, which would have wreaked havoc with those parallel boundary lines between the strata. Then we've talked about one of our favorite topics. In fact, I think Real Science Radio, we're among the world's most well-informed on dinosaur soft tissue.
Yes.
And original biomaterial fossils. I mean, we maintain, we curate the internet's most comprehensive list on 99 peer-reviewed papers so far published on fossils that still have original soft tissue within them.
And number one on Google search for that topic.
Well, we're awfully close for dinosaur soft tissue and then biomaterial fossil list, which is a bit technical.
Yeah.
But I think we're number one on that biomaterial fossil list where we list all 99 papers so far.
Wow. Then, Bob, another topic that's been a favorite of ours over the years, carbon-14. It's buried all over the earth. What's up with that?
Carbon-14, it can't last a million years. It only lasts thousands of years. Yet there's carbon-14 everywhere it's not supposed to be.
That's right. It's in diamonds, all kinds of things beneath the earth's surface, all kinds of things that were alive that died. And you know that carbon-14 is in a lot of the plants that were buried.
Oh, yeah. Forest, entire forest.
Yep.
Buried, even in the Arctic Circle. I think that's one of our later pieces of evidence. So, Fred, they've got carbon-14 in things that are supposed to be millions and billions of years old, like you said, diamonds, and in marble, in dinosaur fossils, in natural gas, in coal, in oil, everything that should not have any carbon-14 left, unless it's contamination.
Yeah.
But we know this is not contamination because of the consistency of the results from all over the world. So there's still radiocarbon in all these sediments and specimens and minerals where it should have decayed millions or even a billion years ago, like in the case with diamonds. And how are you going to get contamination inside of a diamond, the hardest naturally occurring substance on Earth? The guy's working in his AMS lab, high tech, brings in his ham and cheese sandwich. Sorry, kosher folks. And what, is he going to get some mustard inside the diamond before he carbon dates the diamond?
If it's evidence for creation, then yes, he must have contaminated it. That's when it contaminates, which is all the time, which means every single scientist must be sloppy.
Right.
Because, like you said, we find carbon-14
everywhere. Everywhere it's not supposed to be.
Yeah, this other one I like. I'm left-handed.
You know,
I am. And there's left-handed amino acids
in
things that have died. And as things decay, the amount of left-handed and right-handed starts to go to equilibrium. You have the equal amount.
50-50,
50%. Yep, they racemize.
So folks in the audience who have not studied chemistry and biochemistry, they probably don't know what left-handed amino acids are. But we do know that amino acids form proteins. And an amino acid is a molecule, and molecules are three-dimensional objects.
And they have structure.
They have structure, they have a shape. And if you think of a hockey stick, if you have a left-handed hockey stick, well, if you have a player who uses a right-handed hockey stick, he can't just take your left-handed stick and turn it over. It doesn't work. He'd have to hold it upside down and shoot with the handle. It's not going to work. They really are different. And so molecules of many different kinds can be left-handed or right-handed, and amino acids come in that kind of those flavors. They're either left-handed or right-handed. And the way God made living organisms, They only use left-handed amino acids. I mean, it's another stunning hurdle for Darwinism.
Exactly. Yeah, it's another huge argument against evolution.
Right, because when a protein is first evolving, why wouldn't it just use amino acids? You would think it would use half left-handed, half right-handed.
Yeah, it'd be a lot easier.
But no, it doesn't. They only use left-handed amino acids. And then when the organism dies through the natural process of chemistry, its amino acids begin to, I think you use the word racemization, they racemize, they become 50-50 like they would have been before they were brought into a living organism.
Yeah, it's a clock. So over time,
yes,
you're eventually going to reach equilibrium of equal left and right.
Yes.
The problem is we've got a ton of it is left-handed still.
In the fossil record.
So they can't be that old.
And it's such a cool clock that when they find a whale carcass in the ocean, they have taken out their retinas and checked the ratio of left-handed to right-handed amino acids in the whale's retinas.
Wow.
And they use that then to estimate how long ago the whale died. That's so awesomely cool.
That is awesomely cool, and I agree it's a cool clock. I think we use the cool clocks. They use cuckoo clocks.
Oh, that's good, Fred. I got to remember that one. So with left-handed amino acids in the fossil record, that indicates that this stuff is not a million years old. Now, they could racemize. They could return to equilibrium at different rates. Like if you heat it up, it'll racemize mm-hmm. more quickly. But you're not going to slow it down on the surface of the Earth. You're not going to slow it down. So it's a fabulous clock to eliminate the possibility of millions of years ages.
I bet I know what would slow it down. Iron. Isn't iron their current rescue device?
Hemoglobin. Yeah. Supposedly. In fact, it works miracles.
Yeah.
So,
that's
Fred,
another show.
This is... You mentioned dinosaur soft tissue, carbon 14. Mm-hmm. This is an incredibly powerful threefold argument that all these fossils are young. You've got dinosaur soft tissue, dinosaur blood, DNA from a hadrosaur. You got all that. Then you have that their proteins are still mostly left-handed amino acids.
Yep.
And then they're all loaded with carbon 14. What else do you want? What do you want it to come with a date printed on the specimen? I mean, this is overwhelming, hard scientific evidence, including dinosaur blood, for crying out loud, that these things are young, that they're not old. And if they're young, buried in all this rock strata, that means there had to be a global flood to lay down all those fossils and all that sediment rapidly recently.
But, Bob, there is no evidence for a global flood.
Oh, yeah.
There just isn't. You know, I just got my fingers in my ears. I swear when I have had this argument before, I'll talk about the evidence.
We'll be having a good evidence.
Overwhelming evidence.
Phenomenal
we'll be having
evidence.
a good conversation. It's like they never heard it. They just didn't want to listen. Hey, but when are you going to give me evidence for a global flood? There is none. There's no evidence for a global flood.
Right. It's like Lawrence Krauss on Real Science Radio
saying,
all evidence overwhelmingly supports the Big Bang. Hey, and folks could look at the evidence from the giant claw.
The giant claw. New video on RSR.org's YouTube page. That thing's hilarious.
Isn't that funny?
I can't believe you found that. That's an old 1950s movie.
Yes.
Like late 1950s, 57-ish.
Yeah, B movie, sci-fi. Corny as corny could be. But even the science they knew at the time helps to completely falsify the Big Bang theory.
Yeah.
Because the universe is not half antimatter.
I like what our producer said. The Big Bang is a B movie itself. It's just
really
cheesy and wrong.
Exactly.
So, Bob, what about polystrate fossils? We got a really cool page on that, too.
Oh, wow. In fact, it's our style, Fred. If we make a list, we try to make the best list, the most comprehensive list available on the entire internet.
So, poly, mini, straight, strata?
Strata, fossils.
So, yeah.
So if you have a fossil that goes between multiple layers, that is evidence that those layers were laid down rapidly. And there are so many different kinds of polystrate fossils. For example, jellyfish. Now, you don't think of jellyfish as a polystrate fossil. But, Fred, we document this school of jellyfish that is fossilized in a quarry in Wisconsin.
Yep.
Over seven strata, the same school of jellyfish. And the strata was claimed to have been laid down over a period of a million years.
Yes. And we talked about how those jellyfish have a reunion when it's time to die.
Right.
They wait for their whatever period of time, a million divided by
every
seven.
100,000 yeah. years.
They go they and they die there.
Have a family reunion.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go and they die. And Charles Darwin pointed out how rare jellyfish fossils would be mm-hmm. because they don't have hard skeletons.
Yeah.
And he was right. It's awfully rare. And so here, the evolutionists are so gullible. They actually think that these jellyfish went back to the same spot in Wisconsin and got fossilized seven times over a period of a million years.
Yep.
The same species, the same school. It's obviously the same school of jellyfish. So when you bring up polystrate fossils, Fred, there are so many kinds of polystrate fossils. The most well-known type is a tree.
The tree that goes through multiple layers.
And we have at rsr.org/polystrates. Our goal is to have the best list of examples of polystrate fossils available anywhere in the world right here at Real Science Radio. And so you see these photos of trees, and this happens all over the world. You've got a tree sticking through two, three, six, eight strata, eight layers of rock.
That's right.
So what does the evolutionist say? I mean, they have the most bizarre stories of how this could have happened, but typically their response is they ignore it.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Typically.
Yep.
But you take a tree and somehow you shove it down into six previous layers of solid rock,
yeah,
sedimentary rock.
Yeah, all kinds of magical uplifts and side lifts and
facelifts. Or the tree stood there for 700,000 years while the sediments were being laid down around it. And we always say, well, why isn't there greater erosion at the top of the tree than at the bottom
yeah.
of the tree? Why isn't there that? And why do the tree's root systems all mysteriously disappear, broken off within 2 or 3 feet of the base of the tree? Like at Yellowstone, that cliff where they've got like 20 different strata of forest.
Yeah, the petrified forest.
Yeah, that's actually one massive example of polystrate fossils. But there are so many kinds. Fred, look at this photograph of the radiating spines of an organism in multiple layers of solid rock. These spines are like fine little barbs, so thin, so perfect, going out in all directions and fossilized between multiple layers of rock.
Yeah, you can see this. I'm looking at it right now on your computer, and you can go see this at rsr.org/polystrate.
It's just absolutely the best. There's also, we got photos of leaves, fossilized leaves standing end to end in different strata.
Yeah.
How long did they stay there while the strata? Or no, maybe a tornado shoved them through Pennsylvanian sandstone.
Yeah.
Right? There are so many kinds of polystrate fossils, and in fact, a school of whales buried across four strata. And then you have a single whale buried in diatoms, which supposedly were laid down over many hundreds of thousands of years. And so every layer of diatoms is really another strata. So it's utterly falsified that these strata were laid down slowly over thousands or millions of years. Let me give one other example in the Grand Canyon, the nautiloid fossils. I think you and I may have talked about them already. And it takes 4,000 years, they say, the old earthers, to get an inch of red wall limestone, 1 inch. And you have nautiloids the size of your forearm, tens of millions of nautiloid fossils at the bottom layer of the red wall limestone for 277 miles. What did they all sit around for thousands of years waiting for the limestone to grow up around them?
All gathered together.
All so silly. Now, here's one I bet people in the audience haven't thought about. Evidence for the global flood. Submarine canyons.
Yeah, this is a neat one.
It's so hard to form a submarine canyon. When they study, Fred, and these canyons are massive.
Okay, now these canyons are in the ocean, right?
in the ocean.
The ocean floor.
They're as deep. Some of them have walls that are nearly vertical, like at the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. They're as deep as, say, 5 kilometers, miles long.
Deeper than the elevation of Pike's Peak.
Wow. And so the question is, how can you form a submarine canyon if there is a current? When they study the water currents in these canyons today, they move at something like about 1 mile an hour.
Slow. They're not, very slow.
There's not enough energy to carve out these canyons. So because we study the hydroplate theory, not just the global flood, but the fountains of the great deep, the biblical model for the global flood, which is different than plate tectonics. You know, our dear Christian friends who believe in plate tectonics, mm-hmm. they think that the fountains of the great deep were magma.
The fountains of the great magma.
That's just absolutely terrible. But they think that, but that's wrong. The fountains of the great deep were water. And because we acknowledge that the water for the global flood came from the subterranean chamber that was below the firmament. When God created the rakia, the firmament, the terra firma of the earth, he created the water under the firmament and the water above the firmament.
Yep.
So subterranean and the surface waters of the earth. The earth flooded when the crust of the earth cracked. The crack went around the earth like a seam on a baseball. We see the scar left over from that in what's called the mid-oceanic ridge, more than 40,000 miles long.
And a real cool animation of this, by the way, at rsr.org on the YouTube channel.
Yes. Look at our global flood, full-length global flood video. So fabulous. And so because we know where the water came from for the global flood, we have a flood model. It was elucidated by Dr. Walt Brown, PhD from MIT. And therefore, we know that at the end of the flood, the continents compressed. They raised up, the mountains were raised up in a day, as the scientific evidence shows, and the floodwaters catastrophically drained off the continents. That is what carved these submarine canyons.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yes.
Because these are huge
canyons. Huge canyons.
Much bigger than the Grand Canyon.
And they were carved.
Just to give you perspective.
And they were carved when they were not submarine. Dramatic difference in the elevation of the continents at the very end of the global flood as compared to today. After the global flood, the continents began to sink back into the mantle. That took centuries to come to equilibrium, and that's why there are so many coastal sediments that are now submerged.
Yeah, and land bridges, remember?
We
know that there were land bridges at one time.
Yes, that's how men got around the earth. In fact, the Bible says that in the days of Peleg, the earth was divided. And it was divided, Peleg, like archipelago,
yeah, that
by water.
Pirate guy, Peleg.
Yes,
Peleg.
Exactly.
Yeah. Him. So how did a kangaroo get to Australia from the Ark?
It hopped.
It hopped there. Thank you. I mean, how many times have you been asked that question by an evolutionist?
Yes. And what's interesting is that why aren't there kangaroos elsewhere? Because there were too many predators. But human beings also brought animals around the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when certain creatures got to places where then the land bridges were submerged, then that became a haven for the kinds of animals that would otherwise have been destroyed. And the predators didn't have to go so far because they had food everywhere they looked. But the animals that were trying to escape the predators, many of them ended up on today what are islands or far-flung regions.
Did Noah make a mistake by letting the unicorn off the ark first, then the tiger?
That was a big mistake.
The next one is the past geologic catastrophism caused by off-the-charts energy levels.
Oh, Fred, when we look at volcanoes, volcanic eruptions, there's a volcano erupting right now on the Big Island in Hawaii. It's so scary. My son and daughter-in-law and our young grandkids were just on the Big Island for a month, and they were right there. I mean, right now, they could not rent the place they rented for a month. They could not eat in the restaurants they ate because it's all lava and ash and fires, and it's horrifying. But if you compare even Mount St. Helens, which was a big deal, with past volcanic eruptions, it pales. It's tiny compared to the Earth's earlier volcanic eruptions. The tectonic activity in the past, high energy tectonic activity, was truly off the charts compared to today. There's nothing happening today that's anything like what we see. In fact, when I went up to Glacier National Park with Walt Brown a few years back, we joined the Geological Society of America. They had a field trip. And so we went along with a dozen geologists. It was great. You and I did a show on it, if I recall.
We did.
And the expert there, the expert on
in quotes,
the geology of Glacier National Park, he was describing one layer of strata of silt and sand. And we were asking him, well, what's the scope? What's the extent? And he used the same terminology. He said, it's off the charts. It's off the charts. And then we have 10,000 strata. This thin shale, as pure as could be, down as far as we can go. It's all off the charts. Nothing like these things are happening anywhere in the world today. And then we have, Fred, a fun one. I grew up in New Jersey. We had the Delaware Water Gap. When I drive west from Denver toward the Rockies, I look at where I-70 cuts through the foothills.
Yeah.
Boy, that looks like a massive water gap. You've got places all over the world where geologists are befuddled. Why did the water cut through this wall of mountain instead of just flow around it? Why did it happen? They don't understand. And it's because we had continental runoff.
Yeah.
We had sheet erosion, and then we had catastrophic channelized erosion of the floodwaters that created these stunning water gaps around the world.
What is Glenwood Springs, that big canyon before you get there? Is that
Glenwood Canyon?
Glenwood Canyon.
Well, that's a great point. We've driven through there so many times.
Yeah.
It's one of the most gorgeous places on Earth. And it's really an honor, Fred, to live in Colorado, right? I mean, our studio is nestled here in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. And God's creation, even after the judgment, is so beautiful beyond our ability.
Yeah, just think what it would be before the judgment. Wow. Hard to comprehend.
Just beautiful. So that, how about this, Fred, for evidence for the global flood, since there is none? The secularists say that civilization, mankind, came out of Africa. All the evidence is that it came out of Babel. It's all from the Middle East, Turkey, Asia Minor, Mesopotamian Valley. That's where it all is. And in the last year, you and I have done so many shows where we laughed and laughed and laughed because yet another discovery where they have to rewrite human history. And time and time again, it's not Africa. It's the Middle East.
Yeah.
Just like Genesis.
They really tried to push that out of Africa theory. You heard it on all the fake news media.
Yes.
And it's been totally contradicted. Most people don't know
about it. So many times. Even the study of mummies, the genetic study of 1,000 years of mummies, 100 mummies, and they were devastated when they published the results. It didn't show out of Africa. Over 1,000 years of a population, you could see a migratory pattern in 1,000 years in human history, especially that long ago. And instead of showing a migratory pattern out of Africa, it showed the pattern into Africa out of the Middle East.
It's awesome.
Yes.
You know, this next one is one of our favorites, the DNA studies that show a genetic bottleneck highlighting the three daughters of Noah. Now, Bob, you've written a really cool paper on this.
Yes.
That is pretty much proprietary to Real Science Radio.
Yes, and it's why was Canaan cursed?
Yes, and it's totally related to this.
Yes, we have genetic predictions in that paper. And it's online. When people Google, why was Canaan cursed? A lot of people do that because as Christians are studying the Bible, they see in Genesis, after the flood, that Noah gets drunk.
Mm-hmm.
His son Ham does something that causes a curse to go not on Ham, but on the grandson Canaan.
Yep.
And Canaan now becomes the arch nemesis of the Israelites, the Canaanites. What happened? Well, let's not get into it, but if people Google why was Canaan cursed, they'll find it at rsr.org, which is also kgov.com.
Super cool explanation.
So great.
Very biblically supported.
But there is a genetic bottleneck from the three daughters of Noah and the people on the ark, the eight people. And Fred, you remember the first study they ever did when they sequenced the human Y from folks, from men all over the world? Remember what they said?
Yeah, it went back to one man.
They couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
In fact, if I recall the very first study, they couldn't find a single difference. They figured, okay, we've been getting mutations for hundreds of thousands of years, even a couple million since we came from apes. So this Y chromosome, it's going to be all over the map. It's almost identical for men all over the world.
Yeah. And what's so cool about that, and now I'm going to diverge just for a second here.
Yeah.
The Y chromosome is very robust. It doesn't change a lot. And yet when you compare the Y chromosome to the chimp Y chromosome, they were 30% different, which
was
called a horrendous difference by the scientists who discovered it, because it's a horrendous to his worldview.
It's horrendous to evolution, and it makes it look like there was no millions of years of evolution, and mankind was created recently.
If there was going to be a shared chromosome between apes and humans, it shouldn't change. It would be the Y chromosome, but it was 30% different.
Yes, and it's only passed on from father to the sons, so it has way less variability in it. So let's just do one last piece of evidence for the global flood, because we're out of time. But we could continue, Fred. You want to continue?
Should we do a part three?
Lord willing. Lord, if you tarry, you don't return before next week.
Please do. But if you don't.
If you don't. Okay, we'll do. Okay, last piece of evidence for part two. To get the genetic diversity of mankind. Now, this was a study published in the journal Nature.
Nature, yeah.
Which is the world's most prestigious science journal.
And very pro-creation, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. They're as atheist as could be, old Earth, evolution. And Fred, there are so many studies like this one. They said, how long would it take to produce the genetic diversity of mankind?
Across the globe.
Yes, when they're looking at proteins and protein coding variants. You know what they said? You know how many hundreds of thousands of years, how many millions of years? They said about 200 generations.
And that number sounded awfully familiar, because that's what the number of generations that's been estimated since.
Since the book of Genesis describes the earliest patriarchs and, in fact, the origin of mankind.
Yeah. So too bad we can't go with, we got to have a part three, because we're going to talk about comets and asteroids and the moon getting beat up.
Oh, yeah.
All these things are evidence for a global flood.
For a global flood.
Meteorites, evidence for a global
flood. It's going to be so fun, Fred. So there is no evidence for a global flood.
No evidence, Bob.
Remember that. Hey, this is more than miraculous. We're going to do another show on no evidence for the global flood.
There you go.
That's quite the challenge. All right. Thank you, Fred Williams. June is Grand Canyon month at Real Science Radio. So get ready for that. It's going to knock your socks off. I know as I'm preparing, it's knocking my socks off. The actual explanation for the origin of the Grand Canyon, and it will begin with our list of problems with the river carved the canyon.
It smells like feet in here.
I think you'll just
knocked your socks off.
Yes. I think you'll just love it. So until then, Bob Benyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork.